Hello and welcome to the Nattercast for our Breaking Bad Badcast for episodes 107 and 201, No Rough Stuff Type of Deal, and 737. These are the episodes that crossed over the first season. 107 was the last episode of the first season, and 201 is the first episode of the second season. I am Jason Shankle of Shankle Studios, and I'm here as always with my lovely wife,
Sione Baloney.
Sione Shankle of Shankle Studios, and we are the Nattercast. You can get us on iTunes if you search for Nattercast, where our webpage is at nattercast.blogspot.com, and we eagerly look forward to listener mail every week at nattercast@gmail.com. And so let's dive right into our Breaking Bad. So the first episode here is a No Rough Stuff Type of Deal. And this one opens up and they're in this sort of DEA-hosted PTA meeting, which has just got to be like the best thing ever to go to in America, where they're discussing the theft of the chemistry supplies and the arrest of the Native American janitor guy who had like a joint and some pot, so they thought he must be the meth guy. And the parents are all freaking out. They want metal detectors. They want drug tests. They want strip searches. You know, they want basically airport stuff. And Walter is like starts feeling up Skyler in this scene. It's like they're sitting there listening patiently to the presentation. And he...
Yes.
And we're starting to see a bit of their relationship come out.
Basically, I thought in these two episodes in particular, that everyone breaks bad.
Yes, we started to see that in this quite a bit.
And this one of them is the end of the very first season, which was a short 8-episode season. And the next one's the beginning of the second season.
Right.
And I think it really established that everybody breaks bad.
Everybody breaks bad.
Nobody is pure, innocent.
It's true.
And I thought that was interesting. And what you first see is Breaking Bad in a classroom.
Yeah.
Like a couple inappropriate kids. Behavior in a classroom. Not paying attention, falling asleep, getting horny.
Yeah.
You know, getting all aroused.
Well, and we see a little bit of Skyler, a little foreshadowing in her character too, because at first she's like shocked and offended and objecting and putting his hand away. But then she starts to get into it when he like creeps to her inner thigh. She's just like, you know, okay, sure, why not, go for it, you know. And so we start to see a little bit of like, you know, maybe Skyler actually saw some bad break inside of Walter, you know, that there was something there that was larcenous, you know, that she was attracted to from early on, maybe, you know.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of mystery, even though we've kept up to date with all of them, that there's still a lot of very interesting mystery that's becoming more and more fascinating to me about their past.
Mm-hmm.
And what got him to no longer be part of this big, you know, award-winning chemistry team. And
right. And like, what was it with Gretchen?
Yeah. What all's going on? But what drew them to each other? It wasn't just because they were hanging out at a diner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's more about them. We don't know, you know, we see her relationship with her sister, Marie, which is very unique. And there's some, Marie definitely, as you can see in these episodes, gets a little weird. And I'm curious. There's some interesting character development here, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you touched on the thing that's really puts this show miles ahead of everything else is the character development.
It's thorough.
Because the premise is extreme and requires a good deal of suspension of disbelief. And if you have thin characters, you know, that makes that suspension all much harder. But we're with these characters so much, and we get to learn so much about them. And there's so much passion, you know, in not just in the show, but in the fandom of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've brought it up before, and it's something that you and I both have this little, like, don't quite understand, why there's so much hostility towards Skyler.
Yeah, I have no idea. I love her.
As the show goes on, people are very much, oh, I hate that Skyler. And she will do little things to try to, as the show goes on, to try and...
She makes sense.
Well, she makes sense, but she'll do, like, these little things. I don't want to give away anything, but she'll do relatively minor... transgressive things as her life becomes more complicated that are totally understandable and proportionate. And people will be like, I can't believe that she would do such a thing and blah, blah, blah. While Walter is manufacturing methamphetamine in massive quantities.
And as we already know, killing people.
And killing people and doing all this stuff. And it's indeed, like, oh, he had to kill that one guy, but I can't believe that Skyler would let him leave a baby in a car for 5 minutes. You know, and there's all this stuff. So I think that that's a sign that the characters really are that strong.
Mm-hmm.
That people have these strong reactions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even like Marie, who's a kind of a peripheral character, she's a very well-defined character as things go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, okay, so we have... And then they end up having the Aztec, sex in the Aztec.
Well, I mean, they even discuss that illegal equals damn good.
Right.
Why was this so damn good? Why did that feel so good? Because it was illegal.
Right. Now, that's very explicit.
Forbidden game. Fruit tastes the sweetest. Exactly. They make that very clear.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And he says that to Hank later on. We have the scene at the baby shower where Hank pulls out the cigars. Right. And they go back and they're going to have a little alcohol and cigars. And Hank is like, oh, sorry, buddy, because of the lung cancer didn't occur to him. And Walter's like, look, I've already got lung cancer. Give me a cigar. You know, what's it going to do to me now? And it's Cuban. And then Walter goes on this kind of like didactic, mm-hmm. teacherly, well, you know, if this was 1930, we couldn't be mm-hmm. drinking alcohol. If it was 1931, we could.
And this is another one of those conversations where I really paid attention to it. And it's backing up my theory that Hank is onto Walt.
Yeah, I hear you about Hank being onto Walt, and we can get mm-hmm. into that when we get further into the thing. Without spoiling, my consciously onto Walt, he's digging up too much information if he's trying to protect him. So he, you know, so we'll have to see what. But I think I agree that he's smelling something on Walt for mm-hmm. sure. That I don't know if he's put his finger on it, but he's definitely. He keeps coming back to Walt,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
well, he keeps doing these. It's almost like a woman is writing it. He keeps baiting Walt with these little comments,
yes,
to see how Walt reacts.
But from a guy's point of view, he's also breaking Walter's balls a little bit and poking at him because Hank's an alpha and he perceives Walter as a beta.
Mm-hmm.
When Walter, I don't even think has a Greek letter associated with him. I think he's just a crazy, you know, as things go. But Hank is definitely seeing Walter as this little nebbishy guy who he can get some background information on. And who
well,
he can
Hank
thrill.
Is also jealous of his intellect.
He's jealous of the intellect, but he's also, like, when he's at the, later on in the episode, he's at a crime scene, and he, like, sends him a picture. Like, well, let me show you this, and it's like a destroyed
and it's
body.
Also interesting that Hank doesn't have children.
No, Marie didn't want children. It's not clear whether Hank wanted them or not.
Oh, I think he would love to have had sons.
Well, he didn't say, but it's like expressed.
Especially with his relationship yeah. with Walter Jr. Yeah.
Well, it's not too late. Marie's
it's a lot of affection.
Marie's probably only 35.
I have no idea.
Well, Skylar's 40.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, she's probably, maybe she's 37, you know, so they have time in there. The Schraders, there could be a little Schrader. You never know. So, anyway, so we get this theme that, you know, of the whites and their sex life, and they're both kind of, you know, turned on by the transgressive.
But it's not just that either, I think. I mean, this could just be a coincidence, but it is very common when people are faced with death mm-hmm. or the possibility of losing or high risk. Like, I've heard a lot of couples will have sex after a funeral.
Sure, you know.
Because it's just, you know, I just think it's in our DNA to try to recreate life in some way and reconnect and bond.
War babies is a big thing. We had a baby boom after World War II, right? You know, you have this big loss of life, something like the Holocaust. That's a larger loss of life in a war than we're used to. You know, and we have, you know, so that's absolutely, I think there's this life-affirming thing, you know, about facing danger. Then we have Jesse, you know, he's dealing with his real estate agent.
Oh man!
She's showing this.
She is the stereotypical nightmare real estate agent.
Isn't she?
Just, you know, overgroomed,
very aggressive.
Just annoying is all hell.
And very like lecturing you about why you're buying this house, and not. She's stereotypical bad real estate agent because a good real estate agent lets you, kind of guides you, but lets you see. But she's like, look at this, look at this, look at this. She's like this bossy cheerleader type.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's like, come on, team, you're buying the house. Right. And she's got Pinkman as her client, which I think she needs a spinoff show.
No, I
think we need to see her deal. I think she needs to have been Tuco's estate agent and Uncle Tio's and everybody's. You know,
I do wish we had seen Pinkman hire her. That would have been a scene that I think that they should have let us see.
That should be a webisode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because just him deciding to sell, and then him. Because he has inherited this house.
Right.
And then, or it's going to be inherited.
It's not his, it's his parents, but they're letting him run the show of selling it.
And I think this guy's very odd. And he just doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would know that whole process. It's like, why did he pick her?
Right.
Just what was that meeting like? Because there's so many, well, later on, there's a lawyer that gets involved. And so many fantastic scenes happen in the lawyer's office.
Right.
With these guys that don't know what they're doing. And I would like to have seen that with the real estate agent.
And yeah, Pinkman is not really, I mean, you're right about that. He's not the kind of paperwork guy. You know, like later on, I don't want to, again, no spoilers, but later on when he has to launder money, part of that is paying your taxes, right? And he's like, bitch, I got to pay taxes now? And it's like, you're hiding from the law. You have to make some pretense of covering yourself up. You don't, you know. And so rather than do that, he's just going to go off and street hustle or whatever. And so he's definitely has this thing of Jesse's primary character flaw, I'd say, is that he's lazy. Right, he's a decent human being, but he's morally lazy, especially. He's not going to go out of his way to do the right thing if it's going to inconvenience him. But he then ends up suffering a lot of guilt from the consequences of his negative actions. Mm-hmm. You know, and Gilligan's called him, Vince Gilligan's called him the heart of the show.
Right.
He's the moral compass of the show. I call him the heart of the show, but Gilligan says moral compass, which is obviously probably more accurate since he's the creator. What he's saying there is that this is the character who feels the moral consequence of what goes on as we go. That has to come from a tragic flaw, and I think we're seeing it here. Yeah, he probably just either hired the first real estate agent in the book, or it's his mom's friend, or something like that. Anyway, so Jesse comes to visit. Walter comes to visit Jesse. You know, as the real estate agent is showing the house, and she calls it a fixer because there's a big acid burn hole in the ceiling that's covered in blood.
Fixer.
It's a fixer. You know, you think it might be a little.
And
bit
then the
difficult.
Whole thing of that. You know, Jesse's out in the RV.
He's like lying on the RV.
She makes that great face. It's like
he's in the RV
because he refuses to go into the house
because he can't go in the house because it smells like a laundromat. A dry cleaning place with a dead body in it.
But what do you think happened in the RV, Jesse? You guys cooked in there and you killed in there too.
Yeah, but he didn't flush anybody on the RV toilet, I think that's his point.
Something about the toilet was his breaking point.
What I don't get is why Jesse at this point would want, like, because when you sell a house, that's like, and maybe you're right, he doesn't know the process. That's house inspectors. That's, you know, maybe the city coming by. That's maybe this
disclosures.
Looks, it's a nice neighborhood. Maybe there's a neighborhood association as well. There's a lot of disclosure. There's a lot of investment. Your life gets looked into when you're selling a house. In a way that I think you wouldn't want to do, even if you can't sleep there. You just get an apartment. You know. Anyway, so Walter comes and says he's made this deal with Tuco, this fulminated mercury explosion deal where he's going to produce 2 pounds a week for Tuco. And Jesse flips out at him and says, we can't get that much pseudoephedrine. Right, that's the flaw in the plan, is the lack of pseudoephedrine. And so Walter... comes up with this idea to not use pseudoephedrine and to use what's called the P2P process, which apparently Jesse's not heard of, which you would think would be kind of odd. And that is, this is our segment that we're going to add to the show for one episode called Yes, Science, where Walter explains to Jesse that you can make methamphetamine without pseudoephedrine by doing what's called reductive amination of phenylacetone. All right, now I look this up. I am not a crank manufacturer. I look this up on the
board. But you are a science geek.
But I'm a science guy. And then Jesse science. Says, yeah, science. Like, I don't have to drive to Las Cruces to get, you know, pseudoephedrine. We can just do it here. And what this is, what Walter is suggesting is what's called the P2P process. And later on, Hank calls it the P2P. And what that entails is taking phenylacetone, which Walter proposes to make in what's called a tube furnace. I don't know what that process is, but basically you make this phenylacetone. And then you react it with what's called methylamine on a catalyst bed that's usually either aluminum or platinum. And we're going to find that Walter prefers aluminum. And what this does is the reaction is reductive amination. And what reduction means is that you're removing an oxygen group from the phenylacetone, or an oxygenation point. And amination means adding a nitrogen group, because ami means nitrogen. So when you have an amino acid, or like methylamine, that's nitrogen. And what they don't realize, is that the government got hip to this recipe, like in 1980. You know, and this is why the red, white, and blue process, which is much more dangerous, became popular, is because both methylamine and phenylacetone are highly controlled substances. You cannot get them without a major industrial license. Now, they're going to synthesize the phenylacetone, but they don't have the methylamine. You can also synthesize that because we're a show, they decide to roll forward. So they're going to steal, they're going to heist the methylamine. And that's going to be the origin of what comes to be known as the blue meth. Right, and the blue meth is our great is Hank's Great MacGuff. It's this thing he's trying to track down as we move forward in the show. So Heisenberg has now has his first creation, which is essentially highly, highly pure old school biker crank. And that's our yes, science moment for Walter and Jesse's plan. And then also this scene ends with Jesse, like, he looks at the shopping list for how they're going to do this, and it's all this advanced chemistry, and he's like, I don't even, can't even pronounce this shit. I don't know where I'm going to find all this stuff, you know. And Walter gives him this pep talk, like this dad, teacher, do you always want to be afraid? Don't you want to? He literally says it's the first day of the rest of your life. Like, he starts off with that old trope of, like, you know, believe in yourself. And gives Jesse this inspiring little speech. And Jesse kind of buys into it, at least enough to comply with this thing. And we kind of are seeing here, part of Walter's Breaking Bad is that this is like dark side teacher. Dark side dad. It's dark side dad, you know. That he's encouraging him to become a meth producer. And this is like a moment that's another...
And it's interesting because he ridicules him so much.
Yeah, he puts
particularly
him down.
For being, not finishing school and not doing his class. And
being lazy. Yeah.
Walter is really, really cruel to Jesse.
Yeah, there's the one scene where he comes back with all the stuff. He says, very good, very good. You got everything. Right.
And it was like the first, I mean, we were both like,
the only time in the series.
Oh my God, he's been nice to him.
Yeah, he was
he's
nice
acknowledged
to him.
It.
But because
yeah.
he brought him a bunch of toys yeah. to play with, he brought him a bunch yeah. of chemistries. It's like brought him this little train set to play with or something, you know. And so now, ooh, that's very good, Jesse. You brought me what I want, you know. Yeah, so Walter's definitely got this kind of like, but he's like a refrigerator dad. You know how they used to say refrigerator moms, the cold mothers, they kind of blamed autism on that. And I think of Walter as kind of a refrigerator dad. He's kind of cold and distant. Character to the people in his life that he cares about, including Jesse, who's like this son by proxy, you know, sort of. Okay, so they're gonna have their cook, you know, but before that we get the baby shower, right? And so here, you know, we're having a baby shower, we're shooting a little movie for the child that's coming, and Marie gives Skylar to give the kid this baby tiara, like this little white gold multi-carat zircons, you know, which is still pretty pricey, hundreds of dollars, completely useless to a new mother or to a child. It says a lot about Marie, doesn't it? You know, a little bit like this highly expensive gift that's completely impractical and can't be appreciated right by like a baby, that kind of thing.
Well, it's bizarre. It's like, I mean, they have an interesting sibling rivalry going on.
Yeah.
And Marie definitely, and it continues, you really see that Marie really lives beyond her means in her head,
mm-hmm.
really wants a different life than Hank can give her.
Right.
Or that she can give herself. And here she's having a baby, and what she's thinking of is this thing that's incredibly decadent. You know, that this is a princess. That's like, she's projecting. Marie wants to be a princess.
I think so, yeah. There's mm-hmm. definitely projection.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we find out that the tiara is stolen. Right, so this is mm-hmm. this is our first additional... So Skylar broke bad a little bit with Walter in the parking lot, but that's kind of like a, you know, married couple thing. Now, this is our first character who's really breaking bad besides Walter.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out she's a klepto.
Mm-hmm.
And we also find out that... And we find out because Skylar gets... detained at the store when she tries to return it, and then we see Skylar do something which we'll see a few more times, which is she pulls her grift. Skylar pulls out the old grift, right? And she's being held in this back office, and she just begins this like, "You're holding a pregnant woman," and she starts doing the Lamaze. "Oh my God, I'm going into labor," and she completely like, you know, snows these two like nervous men who have her held. And gets out of trouble, but then, you know, has obviously got a lot of problems with Marie. So we've seen these sisters here both kind of demonstrate a little ability to lie or to divert. And also you notice that the owner of the shop said, you know, my assistants remember seeing a tall blonde woman take this tiara, and Marie is brunette. So she's got, either there's a misremembering going on, or she's got wigs. know, she has a, like a disguise closet, maybe?
Well, I don't think that was true. I think he was just doing that to bait her.
Or it's just baiting, yeah.
Saying, she will say this.
Right.
And then he describes her to make her feel in jeopardy.
Right.
Because he really has no idea. If they knew that they would have gone after her.
Right, and he really was very convinced it was her. So it's the old cop routine of saying, we know we have all this evidence.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Okay,
I don't think there's a wig. But if there is, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because they do live in this town.
Right, she has to go back to that shop at some point.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, so anyway, so Skylar ends up like not talking to Marie for an extended period, and this makes, you know.
They do the phone dodging thing.
They do the phone dodging thing, and then Hank is getting very nervous. And I think we're seeing another element of Hank's character. And this is what I love about these rich characters. So Hank is this very alpha super cop kind of guy, except when things are kind of going bad at home, or if he gets injured or deflected off of something, and he becomes very incapable.
See, I don't see him as alpha. I see him as macho, but not alpha.
Okay, or macho. Yeah. It's whatever, but in charge. It's like he takes command of a law enforcement scene, of a room. He does the, you know, what do you call it? On the job, he's
got some swagger.
He's got some confident command, and he's got some respect, and he's got a desire to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And then for everywhere else in his life, he's kind of like playing this little catch-up, and Marie not being able to talk to Skylar is driving Marie crazy. She runs over this kid's toy, you know, radio-controlled car. Hank is saying, you know, you only have a few more sessions with Dave. I think you really should talk to him. So Hank is hip to this. She's a kleptomaniac thing, and she's seeing a counselor about it. And he comes and he basically reaches out to Skylar and says, you know, just whatever it is, just talk to her. Just answer the phone, you know, please, whatever. And then Skylar has what I think is one of her best monologues, certainly her best monologue to date, you know, on the show, where she says, oh, Marie needs help. Let me tell you, I'm the almost 40 pregnant, accidentally pregnant woman with an overdrawn bank account and a, you know,
that was brilliant.
It was just like, but my kleptomaniac bitch sister needs all the attention. You just see their whole childhood just come up, and Hank is standing there terrified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a guy who'll go up against the cartels, but he can't.
Yeah, I had a little twinge in that one because it reminded me of my own relationship with my sister. Yeah,
you want to talk about that at all, or are you just
not in great detail, but. You know, but I always was like, I was much more like Skylar. I would hide my vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm.
To admit that I need help or to ask for help was a sign of defeat.
Mm.
You know, and then, you know, and she had her little eating disorder.
Right.
That pretty much sucked up all the oxygen in the family for a while.
Right. So she needs all the attention.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah, I can see that.
And got it.
Well, there you are. So I guess we need to break bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
While I was pretending to be successful.
Yeah. And that's, and Hank is standing there like in the middle of this, seeing it all come out, you know, and he's great. This is one moment, this is like my pro Hank moment, is like, you know, we pull away, we get the long shot, he's like hugging her to like reassure her because she like loses a little bit. He says,
That hug was so cute with the little paws,
pats
with the hands.
Pats of the hands.
It was like totally respectful. It's
and
like
he also
said, I don't, you know, mess with,
you want me to check out that water here?
he just, he's so cute.
Yeah, Hank is one of the characters in the show, and I would say maybe along with Walter Jr., who's truly just a good
person.
Yes. That we've seen so far. Now, he might be corrupt, he might be on top of Walter.
Not much, no. I think Hank is a good person. Definitely.
I think so too. We might find out that he's broken bad in some ways. You know, he has some mystery to him. But from what we've seen.
Not too much.
Well, like Cuban cigars. He didn't help any.
Oh, come on. That's pretty typical.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yeah, totally.
We'll see. Anyway, I'm just saying, like, even if we discover that, what we've seen so far, certainly, is that he's very genuinely motivated. He's ingenuous. He's trying to do his job. And he's trying to love his wife. And he's trying to do all this Dr. Phil stuff. You have to love your wife. Let me put it up on the big board because men forget this.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay, Doc. Whatever.
I think you should teach lessons on how to be a good husband.
Oh, listen to you. You need to teach lessons on how to be a good wife because you just started right there with your... Oh, you're so perfect.
We are good spouses.
We are good spouses to each other. It's communication is probably the main thing. And that's, well, no, but that's what we're seeing in the show.
Yes.
Very genuine relationships where communication's breaking down.
And you're, whose team are you on? Always team are you on? Yeah. Remember that you're on the same team. And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so we're getting back to our main line here. We have, so Walter and, Walter and Jesse, first they do a red, white, and blue cook, and they take it to Tuco, and it's not
Although, enough. Can I just say that I really got a kick out of their whole stealing?
Oh, yes. No, we're getting to that. We're getting to that.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so they do the red, white, and blue cook. They go back to Tuco. It's not enough. It's only half a pound when they, we're going to provide two. Then Walter, ups the ante. And then that's when he knows the methylamine thing, to 4 pounds a week, right? And Jesse's looking at him like, are you crazy? We'd have to get all the Sudafed in the Southwest.
We
have to send Smurfs out.
There's not enough Smurfs.
Right. And that's when we have our yeah science moment. And so mm-hmm. they do their methylamine cook in Jesse's house while the real estate agent is showing the place.
I loved that.
Did you love that? And the little girl is a little girl, little boy, little girl.
She's just like, hey!
She sees this Easter Bunny looking crazy guy in his rabbit outfit.
Yeah,
it's Walter.
And then when they were doing the stealing, they had the pom-pom masks on.
Right.
Walter, it's like, who's the Smurfs?
Who's the Smurfs? Oh, so that's our other yes science moment.
And this is great.
This is a thing
great
you
art
see.
Direction. Great art direction. I got to write that person's name down.
Yeah.
It's a guy. I did pay attention to it.
So they're going to steal the methylamine, and they have to break into this highly secure lab to do it. And Walter has, he's going to use thermite. Which he describes the destruction of the Gustav gun, mm-hmm. which is, I looked that up, that it was the largest piece of military artillery ever put into combat, was the Gustav gun in World War II. I didn't see the part about it being destroyed by thermite, but thermite is what it would take, so I kind of assumed that that's what happened. And this stuff burns at thousands of degrees. It'll melt through any substance known to man, pretty much, or burn it or whatever. And so these smart, and then they have Walter gets the ski masks. And yes, and they're these pom-pom ski masks. And Jesse's like, what is this, bitch? And he's like, that's all they had. He says, if that's all they had, you went to the wrong store. But Walter's got it right here. What difference does it make what your mask looks like?
And I think all this time, when I was a kid, I loved Etch-A-Sketches.
Yeah.
All this time I could have been melting and blowing things up.
Oh, yeah. No, thermite, you know.
Instead, I was doing these massive labyrinth apartment buildings with all the pieces of furniture.
There's a bunch of different ways to make thermite. It's basically, it's a metal, finding metals that'll burn at a high temperature is the key thing, right? Magnesium, burns incredibly hot. And once it's rolling, it burns like wood and it just goes. And so they got and then they tie up the guy in the bathroom. Which is great. So he's trying to get out. And they get the barrel. And this huge barrel of methylamine. And then they get it back to the house. The RV won't start, so they have to cook downstairs. And the thing is, I looked up in our Yeah Science, for our Yeah Science segment, I looked up the P2P process. Its tragic flaw is that it's incredibly smelly. It's much smellier than red, white, and blue. It creates this dead... Because it's all these amino acids, which is basically... That's what bodies are when they break down, right? And so it's apparently...
It really turns me on when we do all the science speak. Oh, I just get quiet and start staring at you. Are you noticing?
Yeah, I've been noticing. He's like, if Walter had this kind of attention of his students, he never would have broke bad.
You think so?
I think so, yes. You're not in the back of the room fiddling with anybody. Anyway, but this apparently smells like dead fish, right? So the real estate agent is squirting around the air freshener.
While people are walking her, yeah.
What they didn't do was have Jesse take off the bunny outfit. They have a week to cook this stuff, right? There's no reason to cook it right now.
They don't really want to sell the house.
He also doesn't really want to sell the house. So, no. Wait a minute. If you screwed up and there's a thing that's going to happen. Walter said they have enough supplies to cook for the indefinite future from his point of view. Have Jesse strip down, go upstairs and say, look, I'm sorry, I left you a message. I can't do this today. I'm not feeling well, and I really just need to be in the house, and cancel the walkthrough, and that's it. You don't try and keep cooking this dead fish smell and stuff while people are coming to see the house. Nobody's going to want to see the basement. So when he tries to get in, and he's like, it's occupied, bitch. He's like, it's not a bathroom. I just want to see what's down there. You're not seeing the basement, man. Get out of here.
reminds me of when I went through this house before I bought it. In the basement was this makeshift bathroom that I didn't know about. It had this big like barn door that slid across it. Mm-hmm. And during the open house, I had the audacity to reach it and pull it open.
Yeah.
And there was a guy taking a dump. One of the housemates was in there taking a dump in there. So when I saw that scene, I was like, that makes sense.
That makes sense. Sure, of course. Why not?
I mean, how many times do I look at some of these shows that we're watching and go, that makes sense. And it's the thing that doesn't make sense to most people. And then the stuff that doesn't make sense to me, people just totally have suspension of disbelief. Like, you know.
Oh, sure.
Some of the stuff on Sam Crow.
Oh, Walking Dead. You know. Yeah, of course. There's all kinds of ways that dead people can come back. And they would probably be hungry. You know? But wait. No, my favorite one of this is from an old friend. I tell a story about seeing Pinocchio, right? And you're watching Pinocchio and they get halfway through to the point with the whale. Right. And he goes, no, wait a minute. No way. Because they have the goldfish in a bowl. Right.
Uh-huh.
That is a freshwater fish that would die in the saltwater environment of the interior of a whale. And then so I didn't wasn't there. My friend said, yeah, also puppets can't talk. And there's no blue fairies.
Darn.
Oh, yeah. Huh? You know, it's how suspension of disbelief works. That's what's so great.
We're all different with it. Yeah.
Yeah, we're all different with it. Anyway, so they head out to see Tuco, and this is the end of the first season, the seventh episode of the first season. And Tuco likes the new blue meth, and one of his guys, Gonzo, he's there with Gonzo and Nodos. You know, I love these names, by the way, Badger and Skinny Pete and Gonzo and Nodos. You know, it's just, they're like the Muppets, you know, with meth.
And so, meth Muppets.
Meth Muppets. Meth babies. So Gonzo, what do you call it? He mouths off a little bit to Walter and Jesse. Oh, and I love before this, Jesse's like standing there in the junkyard with Walter. They're under like this tower of cars. It's like four towers of cars. And Jesse's like, this is like a non-criminal's idea of a drug deal. You know, and then Walter's like, well, where should we meet? He's like, I don't know. How about the mall or Taco Cabeza? No one ever gets shot at Taco Cabeza. This is where people come to steal your drugs and leave you bleeding to death. And it's kind of...
I know, you just love this part.
I love this part because it's kind of true. Because it's probably where I would at first plan to meet Tuco. Because it's like, well, you don't want to be observed. You know, you don't want anybody following you. But then it's like, it's really suspicious that you're here and this guy's a psychopath. You know, he beat Jesse down with a bag of money last week. Why is he not going to roll up on you and take everything, you know? And so I think I'm with Jesse on the Taco Cabeza objection.
Although from an art director's viewpoint, that was just beautiful. The stacked up cars, the colors.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really well done.
Yeah, and it was part of this whole, you had a thing about like Sergio Leone.
Yes.
You know, and yes. Spaghetti Westerns definitely being a visual theme here.
Little Peckinpah.
Peckinpah, right, you know. So this is very much like Once Upon a Time in Albuquerque, you know, kind of thing. anyway, so Tuco comes up, they make the deal, Gonzo lips off a little bit, says, make sure you remember you work for Tuco, and Tuco, like, does that Joe Pesci thing, like, from Goodfellas,
yeah.
Where you're like, you're on his side, but then he starts to, what am I, a clown, do I amuse you, kind of thing. You don't know if he's breaking the guy's balls or if he's crazy, chances are he's crazy, and then he beats the guy down, and we have a beat down. Right, and a drag off, and we leave Walter and Jesse standing watching their business partner, essentially, who has made a huge investment in their business. He gave them like five figures that they have to pay back at 25% a week, right? So they got to work for this guy, you know, for a couple more weeks, for sure, just to get out of their situation. And he's pulled this guy off and made them watch him beat him down. And we leave season one this way. He says, you know. And this is like amazing. Like you're waiting a whole season and you've just seen these guys face the reality of the business environment they're in. And all of these fantasies about I'm the silent partner and you'll just deal on the street and there's a safe way to sell meth are gone. You know, and I think it was a great place to leave the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the next episode is called 737. And here we open up a little bit, kind of meshes in the afternoon, a little bit new, you know, French New Wave. Black and white at the White household. You can see their wind chimes in the backyard and the pool. And we see this eyeball floating in the pool on this burned teddy
bear. And I noticed that this episode was directed by Bryan Cranston.
This first episode of the second season.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't notice that he was the director. So he's directing and producing. I think Cranston really recognized that this is his show. I mean, this really... He's been an impressive actor for a long time, but it's been supporting. You know, he was on Malcolm in the Middle, was like his big.
Well, it's typical for shows that start to get any traction out into the second season, if you've, especially since there's some Emmys that he gets here for this. Mm-hmm. But for them to switch to producer, but often producer doesn't mean what we think. It can mean anything. It can mean they're just giving him that credit because they're also bumping his raise.
Yeah.
But the fact that he actually directed it.
He's directing, and it becomes a star vehicle. Too, like you'll see these guys like Charlie Sheen and all these guys who are stars on a show where they're realizing that this show is feeding their stardom a little bit, right? And so they'll produce so that they'll have.
Well, if you want to make money, you have to get a chunk of the back end, which is the producing.
Well, a chunk of the back end for the money, but also you want the control. So you get the production credit. So, like, even if you're not out
there. So no one sabotages this thing that's working.
Yeah, it's not like Bryan Cranston is necessarily hiring the location scouts and stuff, but it's more like he can step in and say, this show needs to do this and this to continue, you know, and he can get that authority because he has that title, you know. And I think that's part of what's made the show really sustained, because Heisenberg is just this incredible character, and to see him come and go like Batman and Bruce Wayne has just been so.
We're gonna have to hurry up because I'm really dying to go see Sam Crowe.
Oh, we're gonna see Sam Crowe.
Well, we just got this tech. Well, we always talk about Sam. We always talk about Breaking Bad when we do Sam Crowe podcasts.
So now we're on.
And I just got this text message from one of our good friends who watches Sam Crowe too, and we're just like, oh my god, So
we'll get through this episode. So this episode's a little more concentrated. We come in rolling into the second season. So, and we have 7:37, and we see this teddy bear floating, and we don't know why. And then we cut to. Immediately, like previously on Breaking Bad, and we see the recap of Tuco beating his guy down, and we didn't see what happened to the guy. He was alive when we last saw him. And Walter sits there and he looks at the money that they've been given, and he calculates with all of the major debts that they have and the expenses that he needs $737,000. Right, and so 7:37 is the title of the episode, and 7:37
is a plane, crashing plane.
Well, no, yeah, you're spoiling. Do not spoil what 7:37 means. But anyway, so...
I know what 420 means.
I know what 420 means. Clearly. So then they're going to leave the junkyard, and they catch up with Tuco coming back the other way, and he brings his guy out. He brings Gonzo out, and Gonzo is choking on blood and dying from basically being beaten in the head.
Yeah, it's not fists. Pretty.
It's not pretty. And he's like, do that thing. Do the breathing thing. You know, and he's like, it doesn't work. You know, they don't teach that anymore. You know, all this stuff. He's like arguing back the medical procedure for a guy who chokes out. And so now we have a dead guy, and they leave him there. And now we have Walter and Jesse have a much more serious problem, which is that they are... Or at least Jesse is very convinced. And this is another situation where Jesse's little bit of street smarts actually helps them out. Where he's like, there's no way crazy Tuco is sitting at home and not thinking that we're a problem if we've seen him commit this murder. Right? And Walter's like, oh, he would have killed us right away if it was a plan. And he's like, you're acting as though he has a normal brain. Jesse knows the tweaker mind, right? Because he tweaks himself. Mm-hmm. So he's like, this guy's going to go and everybody who witnessed this is going to be a problem. You know? And so... we need to take him out. And Jesse's like, we're going to shoot him. And then Walter walks him through. It's an interesting scene. Jesse suggests we need to kill this guy, which we almost never see. This kind of the violence usually comes from Walter, you know, Walter's thing. And Walter talks him down out of it. He says, there's no way, even if we're both armed, that we're going to get into a shootout with a superior number of hardened gangsters and survive, which is true. Right, basically. And so they come up with this plan. This is our yes science moment for this episode, the ricin plan.
Yes.
Right.
Which we're going to revisit. Pay attention to the ricin. And I love the shooting of the ritual of making it. It was very complex and interesting, and some great close-ups.
Right. And I love the bit. So ricin comes from these beans. Yeah. They're called castor beans. And Walter produces this little bag of castor beans. Jesse's like, well, what should we do, bitch?
It's the magic green giant
beans. And he pulls out these magic beans. Yeah. And Jesse has got this look, this Jack and the Beanstalk look on his face. Like, and Walter says, we're going to make ricin out of beans. And Jesse's like, ricin beans.
Yes.
He's like, no, we're going to
go right for the pun.
Go right for the pun. It's like rice and beans is going to take him out. And then Walter gives his like, this is like, they're in this little phase in the show where it's like Sherman and Mr. Peabody. You know, Mr. Peabody, like, it would always sort of give Sherman a little science or a history lesson. They come back and look at it. So ricin is a poison that comes from the castor bean. Here's our yeah science moment. And it was used to kill a Bulgarian dissident in 1978 who died on September 11th, 1978. According to the Wikipedia, he was killed by the KGB, who injected him with a small dose of ricin that killed him in just a few days. And apparently the way this stuff works, it's the idea of the appeal for Walter is that's untraceable, more or less. And it's certainly untraceable by people, you know, like the would be Tuco's associates, because you're fine for a couple of, for several hours to a couple of days, and then you start to die. And the reason that it takes so long is what it does is it shuts down protein synthesis in your intestines. So you're fine for a long time until your cells, until you shed your intestinal lining, and then you don't replace it. And so you basically just poop yourself out and die of like the worst stomach flu ever. You know, so they're gonna do this to Tuco. And so they do this plan, they do the cook, like you say, okay, and then Walter goes back to Skylar, and she's like, you know, Jesse Jr. isn't, or sorry, Walter Jr. Sorry, I keep saying Jesse Jr. Walter Jr. isn't around, and you weren't around today. I had the house all to myself. What's going on? And so we're seeing the tension here in the family of Walter's absences are really starting to be a problem. And he's about to try and sort of explain it. Probably it's going to be more Walter bullshit. When the car, his phone rings and the car pulls up.
You say Walter bullshit, and in my head, I'm still working on all these different one-liners for, you know, Tuco shitting himself to death.
So we have
crapping himself to death.
So
the death of crap. The crap that the poo.
He's
going to
poop himself right out. We're going to see that. It's going to be great. And so Walter, his phone rings and he goes outside and Jesse's there in the car and Tuco pulls a gun out and has Walter get in the car. So Walter's been kidnapped at the end of this episode. So Skylar's just sitting in the tub, right, trying to communicate with her husband, and he's saying, well, I just don't even know where to begin to tell you what's been happening with me. And then he just, from her point of view, just vanishes, you know. And that's where we leave this episode, you know. Meanwhile, Hank is so earlier in the episode the boys are doing the cook, and here's a Hank moment. They're at the crime scene where they discover Gonzo's body, right? And I think this might have been at the end of the last episode, where they discover Gonzo's body. No, it's in this episode. I'm sorry. And they find Nodo's there, and his arm has been lopped off by a falling car. But they don't quite understand why he's dead yet, right? Because it's like dark, and they've put the lights mysteriously far away from the crime.
That
like
was
this
really
huge
weird.
Perimeter.
Why would you need flashlights when you should just put a work light there?
They have tons of work lights right there.
I know.
There. And it's, they set this perimeter like this happened in the middle of an intersection of a road or something.
Right.
You need this big perimeter. They're in a junkyard. Just move in, guys. You don't need to be 20 feet back.
It was an interesting cinematography thing.
Yeah. And Hank sends the picture to Walter. And this is part of the thing where I think he's like fucking with Walter a lot. He's like, oh, let me show you this. And it's like a dead body.
Yeah.
And he doesn't understand the sting of events to Walter, which is, oh my, they think that Tuco killed Nodos and left him here. And that's what gets Jesse and Walter thinking.
But see, that's
Tuco
part of that whole thing
rampage.
Of he's showing off to Walter because he wants Walter to see that he has this fun, exciting life.
Right.
But the fact that he's just laughing so sadistically over this death.
Right. And then they pull Nodos out.
It was more than just gallows humor. It was like he was really being sadistical about it.
Yes.
But part of me thinks that there's a subconscious, watch out, Walter.
I think so.
This is what comes of
being in this life. You're going to get laughed at. And also, Hank like is like, well, look, there's a lot of blood, but there's no bullet wounds. What's going on? Why did this guy die? And they figure out, after he sends the picture, they figure out that Nodos was trying to move the body because he had this objection to hiding the body here in the junkyard. And the car fell on him and lopped off his arm. So Tuco didn't kill Nodos, but Walter and Jesse think he did. And so that's what gets them on this we have to kill Tuco trip. So that's basically that for that bit. And it also kind of sets up this thing where Hank is going to be sharing information with Walter. That's kind of going to be giving Walter the information he needs to remain one step ahead of a few things, is having some inside information on the DEA. And what you don't start seeing, Walter seems to not see is that puts Hank in a terrible position. You know, if he's sharing intelligence with his brother-in-law, who turns out to be the biggest meth manufacturer in the Southwest, that's going to come back. That could come back on Hank in a pretty bad
way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I think that kind of does it for these two episodes.
They're extra good, but they all are. That's the problem with this series. Oh, and I just want to leave with one of my favorite observations.
Yeah.
Jesse gets a gun.
Jesse gets a gun.
Jesse gets a gun.
And puts it in Betty Lou's handbag. Yes, so we have, you know, Chekhov's gun?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're all looking, this was a wonderfully suspenseful first episode for a season, because we have our heroes, they've been kidnapped by the bad guy, we have no idea where they're going, we have no idea what Tuco's going to do. And, so this is a great place to be. The show really creates tension. I'm warning you now, I mean, if you have a heart condition, if you just don't like going to sleep nervous, this might not be your show, but otherwise,
I don't know, I just find these shows kind of relaxing.
Yeah, I know you do.
Well, they exercise my brain. Yeah, that's why you love me.
I love the dark.
You like bad girls. You always have.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I was just talking to Nicole about that. Nicole's this up-and-coming director of photography. I am doing a small film that we're starting to work on. But tonight we went to the wrong house for a production meeting. We're still laughing
our
asses
off.
Well, we went into a production meeting, which is the wrong one. It was for Roy Murphy Private Eye, which is already done. But anyways,
it's a post-production meeting.
Yeah, so anyway, we were talking about that, and I was saying, yeah, how much you like the bad girls.
The bad girls. Yeah. Not too bad. Don't cook meth.
I don't need to cook meth. I think I'm problematic enough.
Well, until next time, if you'll catch our Sam Crow cast that we'll do later this week, and we'll hit another Breaking Bad, hopefully this week or next week. And until then, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
What's that from?
It's Goodfellas.
God, I'm bad. Oh, you're bad.